All right, we're dealing with verses 6 and 7, 1 Peter chapter 5. This is very pertinent, obviously. It's critical to a healthy Christian way of life that you take this seriously, keep it before you with regard to adversities and testing that you and I will undergo. While there's the general principle that you stay in your niche, you don't abandon your niche, you don't run from your niche, either physically or mentally. You stay in your niche. In other words, if God wants to change your circumstances, He will change your circumstances. If you're in a not pleasant job, then you're in a not pleasant job. You won't be the first one. You just stick with it, pray about it, if He wants to move you into a better situation. I'm just using that as an illustration. I didn't use it with regard to marriage, okay? we're gonna draw some lines there. I didn't say that. You hang in there with those kinds of situations. We've already covered that, haven't we? How positive Christian women to the Christians to whom this letter was sent, there was examples among them of where they had become a Christian and were attending a church, and their husbands were still pagans, and how they were to conduct themselves. And it isn't by, even in a nice way, constantly telling him how much better life could be, and the problems you have could be erased if you just... No, that's not how you do it. You don't do it with any verbal stuff. You take that off your plate. Unless he asks you a question, a direct question. You become a Sarah's daughter. You model yourself like a Sarah's daughter. And you bear up under it. And when he sees some of these rough edges of yours, they're not there anymore. He will see that that church and that teaching has had a positive influence on you. And he can say, you know, little things about it and make little comments. You just roll on, just hang in there. So that's we dealt with the situation where, in a marriage, you have a positive person married to a negative person. Due to circumstances, this person finds it and loves it, and in this case, they became believers and they walked away from that whole cultural, the overt participation into the pagan thing. And they took a bunch of heat for it. They were called antisocial. And it was good enough for your parents. No, it wasn't good enough for anybody. It's the road to hell. How can that be any good? Worshipping false deities. And then they tried to say, you're anti-authority. No, we obey all the laws. Just because we don't go to this temple and fall down and worship the goddess of whatever, that doesn't mean we're lawless. Anybody's lawless, it's the pagans out here that get involved in all of these abominable activities. Into the fertility cult. Oh, yeah. See? And so they could see the difference, and they called him atheists. Huh? Atheists? I believe in God, a creator God, one God, not thousands of deities. How does that make me an atheist? Because I repudiated the religious culture and all the things that it contaminated. But I'll obey the law. But if the law says I can't worship God in spirit and in truth, then I don't have to obey that law. I got a higher law. I got God, and He's ordered me to do this. And the authorities that rule are under His authority, and they're held accountable. They are assigned to these positions. If they want to be a bad ruler, then they will be dealt with accordingly. All authority derives from God. Legit authority, I'm talking about, in the institutions. Marriage, family, nation. Yeah, we teach and proclaim that you are to obey the laws of the land, even if they're onerous, even if they're oppressive, as long as you're not violating you as a believer moving forward spiritually. They can't tell me to shut up about that subject and be right about it. If it's in the Bible, I'm going to teach it. They haven't done that to me. I've never gone through any of that. State-sponsored. I had an FBI agent come here and check us out one Sunday. All I gave was the gospel and just taught. What's that? Yeah, I remember that. You don't remember it. Well, fine. He just checked us out. All right, the verse again, therefore humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God. See, you got the mighty hand of God. You got omnipotence on your side, along with the other divine attributes. You've got a resource you can tap into. I've tapped into it, and I've got delivered from things here and there through my Christian life. As I told you the story a million times, I needed 13,000 and I prayed for 13,000 way back in the day. I'd walk that park out there and I was praying for it. You didn't deserve it, Jack. That's not the point. And one day, Brenda walks up to me and says, here's an early inheritance check from my father. $13,000. It wasn't $11,900. It was right on, spot on. So there you are. You have not because you ask not. That's a verse in the Bible. That's one of the reasons prayers aren't answered. You didn't ask. Now, if you're asking and it's all fueled by your sin nature, you can desire something nice. I've always liked a car like that or this or that. I'd like to have one something like that. It's in your hands. And then go about your business. He does give the desires of his heart, of your heart, as long as they're pure and not corrupt by your sin nature. It's always better to go that way. He's smarter than you and I. And he has infinite resources. He knows everything. Nothing's hidden from him. You can't inform him of anything. I mean, we have language that says, let your request be made known to God. That's language of accommodation. I let my requests or my things be known to you as a person, but God already knows and has always known it. That's a big comfort. And if there's things I'm supposed to be praying about I haven't clicked on, put it in my little head. I'll get on top of it. Make it a mat, put it on my prayer list. So, that he may exalt you at the proper time. Again, the doctrine of divine timing. There's a time for everything under the sun. Book of Ecclesiastes. Casting all your anxiety upon him. Instead of running around and making yourself miserable and suffering under mental anguish, cast your care on him. Take care of this for me. Maybe you've told someone in your life, look, you've got a problem in this area. Let's say it's financial and it's something you can do. You've got a problem, you come see me. Don't be ashamed. I get a reward for this. It's more blessed to give than it is to receive. And it's a blessing to receive. It's a greater blessing. It's a greater blessing in any way. Because one, you get the satisfaction of helping out another believer. Two, you get SG3 for it. You got reward coming. Both temporal and eternal. The book of Proverbs. Cast your bread on many waters and it'll come back to you. Well, you know if you cast bread out on waters, it's gone instantly. But that's the whole point. The point is, you did it, you gave it with no idea that there's going to be any kind of way it returned. Not from the person you helped, from another source. That's your insurance, too, in life, that you'll always have what you need because you step up and you help those in need where you can when God puts them in front of you. That was one of the keys to Job's success. He was positive. He wasn't born to a rich guy. He worked his way up, and he served God. And if someone needed something and he had a little, he'd share it with them. It's in the book of Job. And how does he end up? With twice as much as when he lost it all. So he went through a whole event. Imagine this one. He loses his four adult, young adult, children at a birthday party. And a whirlwind comes, like we'd say a tornado. Satan did it. Killed them all. All of his livestock out there, God had protected it. Raiders. You know. Cattle thieves, we'd say in the West. They all came out there and they took all of it. There was a contest going on between God and Satan. And God started the ball rolling, not Satan. He comes up there, makes his periodic appearance in heaven. Mind-boggling, isn't it? What have you been up to? God knows what he's been up to. Oh, just walking around the earth. Yeah, looking for some mess somebody up. And then God said, have you considered my servant Job? There's not a man. He's the top one on earth right now. Oh, he's that way because you give him everything and put a hedge around him. You take that away and he'll curse you. You strip him of that and he's out of there. Satan, big mouth. God said, you're on, but you cannot kill him. You're limited in what you can do to him. He has to be conscious and awake the whole time that he goes through this. So when all this was taken from him, round one, what did Job say? Well, he humbled himself under the principle, God gives and God takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. He's still God. And then Satan goes back. You touch his skin. A man will give anything to get relief from a skin disorder. Head to toe. Well, he got one. This nasty thing all over his body where he was scraping it. And that caused him to retire from the city because he still had his house in town. That didn't go away. And he went out there on this dung heap and he's scraping himself. And who comes out but his dearly beloved wife? And she's out of fellowship. She's sad for him. She hates this. We have empathy for our spouse when they're suffering, yes, or should. She said, curse God and die. Another test. You know what he said to her? He didn't scream and yell. How could you? And here I am like this. He said, you're acting like the foolish women in town. The foolish women being the negative women. You're acting like them. In other words, that's the kind of advice they'd give. The Lord gives and the Lord takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. So that test, he passed that part of the test. And then he has his three doctrinal friends show up because they're at a distance in other places. They hear about his plight. And they all get their heads together and think, you know, he had to do some bad sin to have this happen. Without hardcore proof, they just assumed that he'd sinned. And they were going to go help him. It wasn't like, oh, how could... See, this is the stupid, well, how could you do that? We've got a sin nature. That's how you can do that. So they all got together and they're trying to get him to confess his sin and come clean. And so he had to go all those speeches he had to go through with his friends. And finally a fourth guy shows up. They say that he's the son of one of the other men that were Job's age, but he wasn't able to come, so he sent his son. Job had his faults in this test. And he lines him out. And then God finally comes to him and speaks to him out on that dunghill. And Job's kind of dissing God things. You can see it in the speeches. You know what God says to him? Oh, poor Job. He says, stand up and gird yourself like a man. And he gave him the speech. He restored his health. He told the three friends that gave him back. They were given doctrinal advice if it applied to him. But they were assuming he had sinned in some big secret way that he was out here. And this is why all this was over on his head. You know what? No. So God said to his friends, you're in big trouble if Job doesn't pray for you. I'm going to hold you accountable. And the only way you can step clean of any misery in your life is you better have Job pray for you. What was Job going to say when one of the words he used in a course of his speech with him, you're a sorry bunch of comforters. You call that comfort? So Job prayed for him. Grace-oriented. They screwed up. And so Job did not sin with regard to the Satan part of the whole thing. And God restored and doubled his wealth and gave him another four kids. The most beautiful girls in the land. And he lived to be 140. So he had it all taken away. Not all. He still had his wife and his house. But what enjoyment is that when you're out there on a deal scraping yourself with this god-awful skin disorder, head to toe? But it doesn't say it in the book of Job, but I know what God did. He took it away from him just like a snap. He just snapped it off of him like... He didn't have to heal over time. And there was no residuals. It was 100%. The book of Job was fun, wasn't it? Nobody's going to go through that one. I say nobody. Hardly anybody. Okay, here is the deal. In conclusion, the self-humbling is explained here in point 26 as entrusting oneself and one's troubles to the one who cares. You know, I tell people on occasion, look, I care for you. I'm for you. I know what you're going through a test. I can't go through your test, but I can bear your burden. I can talk to you. I could maybe give you something, everything. So I care. God cares. And he has infinite resources. He cares. He's not, and he's going to work that test or that these big tests and little ones for good. The words, all your cares, anxiety, means exactly that. Anything that is a source of concern or worry is to be transferred to the Lord via prayer and faith rest. And if you've got to do it over and over and over, do it over and over again. It's like, okay, I'm letting you handle this. And then you run down the road and you start worrying again. Okay, I'll give it back to you. Okay? You take care of this for me. I'm under a big test. You know I am. And I got the formula right here. I cast my cares every day on you and ask you to help me through this day and take care of situations. And I'm waiting on you. And don't let me resort to some stupid energy of the flesh stuff. Just what you want. Because it is these big tests that refine us. We've already had that earlier, didn't we? Only in this way can we enter into his rest. Those who claim the promises, like Hebrews 13:5, enter into his rest. His rest is a soulish state, a soulish Sabbath, if you will. I'm resting from my own works, my own mental works. I'm not talking about overt running around. It is characterized by letting go and letting God handle the situation. In the fundamentalist church, they would say this from time to time. Let go and let God. Well, you need more doctrine than that, but that's a start. you know, we have in the Bible, everything you engage in, you don't have to have some big, long, elaborate prayer. Father, I'm going to hear grocery shopping. Bless my decision making. Not quick. Amen. Boom. And in there and come out. Or whatever it is. Going to the dentist. I don't care. Try it. It works. I've had people say, I was in a situation, didn't know what to do. I got in fellowship. I prayed and asked God for help and it came to me. Okay? Or guess what? You can deal with your own troubles on your own. And if things aren't working out, maybe you need to figure out why. Well, I can do that. Well, maybe you can. The noun cares occurs five times in the New Testament in those verses. The believer who trusts in God and His promises is not afraid when threatening circumstances rise up before him. The cognate verb, meaning to be anxious, worry about, occurs 27 times. The word is used in a non-sinful sense in those two verses. Although not strictly an imperative, Peter's warning against anxiety is derived from Psalm 55:22, where it says, cast your burden on the Lord, and He will sustain you. He will never allow the righteous to be shaken. They can take things from us, but I'm not shaken. I can imagine a person going through the severest test that leads to their death. They're not shaken. They're not worried. The Lord's got me. He's got this. And if it's my time to be promoted to phase three, then that's my time. I want to make the most of it. I don't want to be falling apart and being a bad witness and carrying on like a crybaby. It's my time to go. It's my time to go. And if it isn't, then I'm not going. My whole life, my birth, my salvation, the years of my life, coming to a conclusion. I hope it's with the rapture. That's what I would like to do. So we're all together, more or less. We get out of here. And I'm trying to get you prepared for that. Because just being a believer and walking around, yeah, you're prepared, you're going to go. But you're not going to get the big rewards. You got to stand up and do something dramatic. And I don't mean make something up. I mean just by being in Bible class and being consistent. When pressures are put on you on the outside from family and friends, not to. Well, why can't you go to my church? Because your church doesn't teach the whole counsel of God and teach verse by verse, and that's why I can't go. I won't go. I'm picky about my food. I don't just eat any old sloppy thing. Oh, that's great. The reason we have no need for worry or fear is reflected in the words, for He cares for you. Remind yourself of that. It matters to Him about you, literally. The impersonal verb, mela, is used by Paul, ironically, from God's care for oxen to His care for His communicators. God's taking care of a lot of things out there. He feeds all these little birds running around. He feeds them. Yeah. My rooster still crows at me over there. I like to think it's him. The one that showed up on my property, all by his lonesome. I don't know how he got out of his place, but he did. And it was so funny. I'm pulling my garage, get out of my car, and he has stepped over the threshold of the garage, and he's standing there like this. This beautiful black rooster with a red comb. I said, what do you want? Funny. See, those things God does to humor you. You've got to have capacity for life. I can see it in little things. I don't have to have something big. They're fun to see too, but it's just that God made that. God made that creature. Whoa. He's crawling across here. Oh, I'm going to stomp on him. Okay. I'm not that way as much anymore. Go your way. Get out of here. Brenda sees a spider and she's got to, you know, we got to kill it. Okay. They eat other bugs too. Well, anyway, shut up, Jack. All right. Paul's interest is in God's special protecting care for those who trust in his promises in the face of suffering. All right, let's get our respective places and observe the Lord's table.